Let's get to some other news and then my in-person guest, Stanley Rader. He'll be here in person in just a moment, and I'm sure that you've heard of the controversy that exists concerning Stanley Rader, Herbert Armstrong, and the Worldwide Church of God. That's the subject matter today, and perhaps it's been inspired mostly by the appearance on 60 Minutes last Sunday by Stanley Rader in an interview with Mike Wallace. So we'll get to that much more, and perhaps you have some input on that subject. But first, let's do the business at hand. Update the news, newsmaker telephone calls. Most importantly, we want to talk with you. George Putnam here, and in just a few moments in person, Mr. Stanley Rader, evangelist, treasurer, member of the board of directors of the Worldwide Church of God. He'll be here in just a moment concerning that controversy. And we're going to be talking about 60 Minutes last Sunday. George Putnam here. We call it Talk Back on Radio 87, The Talk of the Town. And we're with you every day, Monday through Friday, from 12 o'clock noon right up until about 1:30. 4.5 years ago, Fred Beaton, Bill Beaton, and Ron came to me and said, we'd like you to do this kind of a program. We'd like you to take an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, and discuss with the public the issues of the day. And I was a little hesitant to do it. But I've got to tell you that this, like Topsy, has simply grown. It has been an amazing experience, a golden opportunity to, in many instances, set the record straight. Now, I'm a great advocate of programs like 60 Minutes. I thrill to watching that kind of documentary with the worldwide sprawling influence, with the opportunity to use all those cameras and microphones and all that equipment and to get the story. I've noticed a very strange and sad tendency on the part of 60 Minutes. Since it became one of those in the top 10, often topping the top 10 in the Nielsen race, it has resorted to some tactics of which I disapprove. I think journalism is even-handedness. And when you do a commentary, as I've done in the past, one reporter's opinion, it should be set separate and apart from the body of the news. But in 60 Minutes, it lops over. There is a tendency in adversary journalism to take a subject that is, of course, of national interest, and particularly when it's gone to the courts, and to take that subject and arrive at a conclusion and then back off from the conclusion you wish to make, and then to fill in the bits and pieces as in a puzzle. And I think that what happened, first I noticed it on the Kissinger story concerning the Shah of Iran, in which I think a great injustice was done to the former Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger. Now, I've never been a great booster of Henry Kissinger. We've had some confrontations, but fairness is fairness. And then, last Sunday evening, I was appalled to see the treatment of Stanley Rader and the Worldwide Church of God in the treatment by Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes. I go back with Mike Wallace many, many years. I recall the time that he interviewed Coast to Coast Mickey Cohen. And Mickey Cohen, who was an associate of ours, long time, he was a source of great information. Mickey Cohen called the late, great Chief Parker and his head of his intelligence squad crooks, called them thieves, said they took money, said they were responsible for debts. And Parker sued Mike Wallace and the network, I believe it was ABC, collected $46,000, and he and Miss Parker took a trip around the world. The Bond Clothing Company sent Mike out here, and Mike was asked to watch how I did the Bond Clothing commercials. And so for 3 days he sat there and watched me do the commercials, then went back and did commercials for the Bond Clothing Company. He's come a long way. That is not to say he does not do the particular type of job he does very well. But I'm questioning the lopsidedness of 60 Minutes. And I say that they could survive and do an excellent job and still be tops in the rating without taking that particular approach. Now, having said that, I must tell you that I have no association whatsoever with the Worldwide Church of God. And people have heard me expound the subject of religion. I've had religion right up to here. I'm sorry. Maybe Stanley will save me by the time the day is over. But I've had about all the religion I can take. But I'm going to tell you, as concerns the Worldwide Church of God, I think a great injustice has been done. Having said that, we're going to get to our guest, And here he is in person, Mr. Stanley Rader. Welcome, Stanley.
Thank you very much, George. I'm very pleased about those comments that you made about 60 Minutes. I'm more concerned about the injustice, of course, that's been done to the Worldwide Church of God rather than to me.
I noticed full-page ads. I saw one that was written by Herbert Armstrong, head of the church, and I see one, Corruption in Government Did Not End with Watergate, written by Stanley R. Rader, treasurer of the Worldwide Church of God, also evangelist, and a member of the board of directors. I wonder if you'd give our audience the gist of that to bring it right up to date.
I'd be very happy to. I think that Americans have forgotten the lesson that we should have all learned about Watergate a few years ago when the President of the United States, unfortunately, and the Attorney General, the former Attorney General, tried to assert, in essence, that they were above the law. And I thought Americans learned at that time that government officials were not above the law, and that it would be good for all government officials in the future to not only ask the citizens to obey the law, but to do so themselves. This ad, which appeared today in the Los Angeles Times, spells out for you how a particular judge in a particular court allowed himself to break the rules of the court, and to do so to the great detriment of the Worldwide Church of God. This particular judge thus becomes the linchpin, in essence, of this case, because if he had not done what he did, which was contrary to the rules of the court itself, unethical and unprincipled, this case, which has now become one of national importance, would never have arisen.
Now, we're talking about the First Amendment. And I wonder if you could quote for us, as an attorney, that particular part of the First Amendment that pertains to the issue we face in this instance.
Well, of course, we always refer to the First Amendment as the one that gives us freedom of religion, freedom of press, speech, and assembly. And that's very important to us because we have a great commission to fulfill, and that is we must propagate the gospel of Jesus Christ worldwide. We cannot do that ourselves without the freedom to do so, and hence we pay particular attention to freedom of press as well as freedom of speech, assembly, and religion. There are two parts of that particular clause. One is the free exercise clause, and the other is the establishment clause. In essence, all of us are supposed to be able to exercise our religious faith without any intervention on the part of the government. And on the other hand, the government is not supposed to do anything directly or indirectly to foster or to discourage churches.
There must be a complete wall of separation between church and state. The state may neither hold or support any religious institution nor impede or impair its operation. Let's go back to the beginning. How did the Worldwide Church of God come into being?
The Worldwide Church of God, of course, traces its historical antecedents back to the time of Jesus Christ. And at all times, since 31 A.D., there have been members of the Worldwide Church of God someplace on the surface of this earth. We can trace the movement of those particular groups. They're always small. But about 1927, Mr. Herbert Armstrong was ordained as a minister. And a few years later, it became apparent to his colleagues and the brethren of his small congregation in Oregon that he was the kind of dynamic leader that could take the church forward in what we call the modern era. So he has been at the helm. He's now in his 88th year, and he's been at the helm for almost 50 years.
He's referred to as then a prophet of God.
Not exactly. He's referred to as an apostle.
He, of course, his roots are Des Moines, Iowa, as I recall.
That's correct, right in the heart of the Midwest.
Tell us about his family. Farming people? Were they in business?
Well, his father, he has described as not being too successful throughout his business career, but he was always in and out of businesses of one kind or another and was trying very hard always to make his fortune by inventing something quite unusual. In my new book, I have two chapters in which I devote to Mr. Armstrong, the man, and I talk about his roots. Of course, he came from a very old Quaker family. and so his roots are very spiritual.
Stanley R. Rader, incidentally, has written an unreleased, yet-to-be-released book. He has an advanced copy for me here, Against the Gates of Hell, the shattering story of an assault mounted by a big state against a small church and how its members fought back to protect the vital liberties of all of us. And that, of course, is the issue we're discussing today. What makes that church different from others? Now, I've had a brush with Catholicism, with the original Hebraic faith, with the Mormons. The Mormons say this is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The Christian Scientists say this is the church. The Catholics say this is the church. The Hebrews say this is the original church. What makes yours different from all the rest?
We are different, George, and I think that it would be impossible on this program to tell you just how different we are. Anybody that wants to know about the church, however, all they have to do is write to us at Box 111, Pasadena, California, and they'll receive all kinds of literature telling them just how different we are. But we do have some essential hallmarks. And those hallmarks are such that immediately we become identifiable. For example, we keep the Sabbath, which begins at Friday night sundown and lasts until Saturday night sundown. Now, of course, there are other groups that do that. But we also believe, of course, in the divinity of Christ. It's to him that we look for salvation. And yet we observe all of the holy days of the Bible, and those holy days are found in the Old Testament and are generally referred to as Jewish holidays. So we keep the Feast of Trumpets, which is coming up soon. We keep the Day of Atonement. We keep the Feast of Tabernacles. We keep the Passover and the Day of Pentecost. We do not keep Christmas. We do not keep Easter. We follow dietary laws as they are outlined, per se, in the Old Testament, not as rabbis over periods of centuries have engrafted rules and regulations upon the Bible. Some of our hallmarks.
As I listen to you, Stanley, then, you being born of the Jewish heritage or Jewish family, Jewish religion or faith, call it that, then you have not moved too far from the original beliefs of the Hebrews. Of the rabbis of old.
That's exactly right. In other words, I would say the main difference is that if you look in the Old Testament at what was prophesied about the coming of the Messiah, we recognize that the Messiah has come. Now, many other Christian faiths feel the same way, but we more or less follow what the Bible tells us very literally. We listen to what Christ said, and we believe in what he said, and we do what he said, rather than simply believing in him.
Getting to the issue at stake, let's talk now about the cast of characters that we were. If we were doing a scenario, a movie script, writing a book, we'd want our cast of characters. I see now Herbert Armstrong, who is the head of the church. I see you as his direct assistant, Stanley Rader. I see other individuals involved in the court scene. I also see the figure of Garner Ted Armstrong, the son, and at one point heir apparent to Herbert Armstrong. Tell us about this confusion, because it is my conclusion, my snap judgment, that had there not been this divorcement between father and son, perhaps this issue would not have come to the courts. Am I correct?
You may be partly correct, George, in the sense that it might not have occurred exactly when it occurred, but there are power-hungry politicians out there and power-hungry bureaucrats out there amongst us. And there are also people always eager to make money and to make money to the disadvantage of someone else. So I'm not surprised that a law was passed a few years ago in the state legislature, which suddenly out of nowhere gave power on the surface to the Attorney General of this state, powers which if exercised would be in violation and contravention of the First Amendment itself.
All right, let's get to some of the charges involved. Let's get to the basic charges that brought about this rush through church receivership, and I think I'm properly designating it. All right, let's talk about the siphoning off of property and assets of the church. That means that you, Herbert Armstrong, others involved, have been siphoning off, taking that which does not really belong to you but to the church and Ambassador College and the other ventures.
What is this based on? Have you taken vast amounts of money, you, Stanley Rader? Has Herbert Armstrong? Has Garner Ted Armstrong? Have other elements?
No. Actually, ABC, National Television, accused me and Mr. Armstrong of stealing $70 million, and maybe more. We've been accused in court of having siphoned and pilfered up to $45 million, and maybe more. Of course, pilfering $45 million would be kind of difficult, I would think. The use of the word pilfer is rather interesting. And that would make Mr. Armstrong and me two of the arch criminals of this century. There have not been any financial scandals where anyone has been accused of stealing $70 million or $45 million. No, it's just a basket of lies. And the unfortunate thing is that the people representing the state of California knew that these were false allegations when they were brought to them.
80,000 membership in the church. They must be dedicated people to contribute that amount of money. Of course, you do tithe, which means you're to take 10% and to send it in, just as the Mormons do, just as many other churches do. But that must be some kind of dedication on the part of 80,000 members, because I see that magnificent Ambassador College, and we held the Emmy Awards one year over there. I see all of the other structures and beautiful, spotless campus. I see the other edifices. What about these 80,000? Are they condemning you at this point? Are they standing by you at this point?
The members of the Worldwide Church of God are truly unique. They are a dedicated group, as you have said. They are an educated group, a highly literate group. They're articulate. And they know why they're members of the church. They know why this has happened, because it was very clearly prophesied for them in the Bible, which is meant to be read now and pertains to the world now and in the future. So nothing surprises them about the persecution. But, as my ad mentions today, if we did not have spiritual resources, as well as leadership, financial resources, physical resources, and the human resources beyond the jurisdiction of the Attorney General of this state, we would have been destroyed. But because those spiritual and human resources, as well as financial, did exist, and the Attorney General could do nothing to stop them, we are not only undestroyed, but the church today is stronger than it's ever been before, more unified. There are more members, there are more baptisms, there are more members in attendance every week, and the church in every way has grown and, in a sense, prospered as a result of this persecution.
You mentioned baptism, and I'd like to go back to your own and the experience of that baptism. As I recall, you were baptized by Herbert Armstrong in a bathtub.
That's right.
Hey, that must have been something to witness.
It was. And it's an interesting point, because the state has tried to characterize me as a person who held a particular position within the church and had particular influence in the church that was rather static. In other words, as though I came into contact with Mr. Armstrong 25 years ago, and from the point that I came into contact with him to today, I was the same person, he was the same person, everything was the same. Actually, for almost 20-some-odd years, I completely rejected all of the religious aspects of Mr. Armstrong's group. I was a lawyer, I was a financial man, I was a certified public accountant, I had other skills, and Mr. Armstrong utilized those on a professional basis and never tried to convince me, indirectly or otherwise, that I should become a member of the church. But as time passed, I was obviously coming more and more under his influence. Rather than his being under mine, I was falling under his sway. And finally, I eliminated all those various obstacles which I saw in my path to becoming a member of the church. In 1975, the last obstacle was removed. It happened to be removed while Mr. Armstrong and I were traveling abroad. We were in Hong Kong, and he said, "Well, Stan, it seems to me you're ready." And I said, "Well, I guess I am." He said, "Well, if you're ready, Stan, now would be as good a time as any." So I said, "Well, I guess you're right." And the only way I could be baptized was to find a place to be submerged, and we found a bathtub, and I went under.
Into the bathtub, he went under, and the rest is history. All right, let's get to the receivership, which went into effect upon the Worldwide Church of God, Tuesday, January 22nd, 1979, in the PM session of Judge Jerry Pack's private chambers. Present at the meeting were Lawrence R. Tapper from the State Attorney General's office, attorneys for the realtors who were bringing public action against the church, John Gibson, Raphael Chatos, and his brother Hillel Chatos, a Beverly Hills attorney who today sits on the Commission on Judicial Performance, which is investigating the state Supreme Court and their performance pertaining to the Tana Use a Gun, Go to Prison case, and also present and about to be named the receiver of the church, retired Judge Stephen S. Wiseman. The individual who brought this this group together was one John Tuitt, T-U-I-T, who in June of 1978 sought assistance from attorney Peter S. Perlman of Saddlebrook, New Jersey. It was this meeting that would eventually bring the forthcoming suit charging the Herbert Armstrong and Stanley Rader with the siphoning off of millions of dollars of church funds, etc. Now, the point I would make is this. It seems to me as I read the facts, not the fiction, not the allegations, but the fact in this situation, that I find a very serious conflict of interest here among judge, attorneys, receivers, etc.
You're a very good reporter, George, and I guess that comes from the many, many years of experience that you have. I actually have been very much surprised that the other newsmen, the other news journalists, have failed to see the real story here. Naturally, when someone's accused of stealing $45 million or $70 million, that's an interesting story in itself. And I don't necessarily feel that as newspaper people they should have avoided that issue. The seminal constitutional issue, of course, is the one that we're most concerned about, because even if Mr. Armstrong and I were guilty of these wild allegations as charged, that would not make the seminal issue, that is, the state versus church issue, go away. That's the important thing. What we did is irrelevant, because whether we did it or we didn't do it, and of course we didn't, but if we had, it would be irrelevant to the seminal issue. But the real story here is a Watergate-type story, the one you're talking about now, and all it needs is hard work by some investigative reporters to look at the events around January 2nd and those events leading up to January 2nd. It's all there to be read. It's all there to be studied. The state, for the moment, has cut off our discovery. They have scattered the witnesses all over the country. But I have an important announcement for you today, George, and I'm going to tell you it because I feel that it might be good to divulge it at this time.
Hold it right there, because at 1 o'clock, the network stations will be tuning over to us. Let's get a little business out of the way. Much more interview to come, and if you have an opposing viewpoint, a fortifying viewpoint, or if you just want to make a comment, we have numbers for you. Here in Los Angeles, and Stanley Rader said, I'll take any telephone call that comes our way as long as it's in good taste and reasonable. L.A., it's 628-KIEB. San Gabriel Valley, it's 443-KIEB. San Fernando Valley, 989-KIEB. South Bay, 325-KIEB. Glendale Burbank, it's 956-KIEB. Orange County, that would be area code 714, and the number is 739-KIEB. We'll continue in just a moment. KIEB, Glendale, serving Southern California. We call it Talk Back on Radio 87, the talk of the town. We're with you every day, Monday through Friday, from 12 to 1:30. And if you're just joining us, you've missed a very important and interesting and provocative part of this program, because my in-person guest is Mr. Stanley Rader. He of the Worldwide Church of God. He appeared on 60 Minutes with Mike Wallace. He finally just said, wait a minute, this is grossly unfair. I won't continue on this basis. If you won't allow me to present my material, then I'm leaving. And he walked out on the air. Well, as I said to him, I want to present an objective report to this community, and I want to get your side of the story, and also I'm going to offer some very interesting adversary questions as we draw to the end. But I must tell you right off the top that we want to be objective, we want to be even-handed, we want to be fair. And he's here in person, and now we're going to continue. And Stanley, there was a story on the wires today to the effect that at one point, The Worldwide Church of God had plans to leave, and they paralleled the Jim Jones Guyana story. Clarify that for me, please.
Yes, I was called this morning by Linda Keys of the Associated Press with the story you're talking about. Somebody has accused the church and Mr. Armstrong of having a master plan to leave the United States and go to some other place to bring about the result of the James Jones Guyana incident. This is just another total distortion of the actual facts. We do believe that when you're persecuted in one place, you flee to another, because the Bible tells you that. And we also know that if the Constitution of the United States should be declared a nullity as a result of this action by the state of California, then in order to continue our work of fulfilling the Great Commission, we're going to have to do so from a place where we are free to do so, as I mentioned earlier in your program. So naturally, if we are unable to operate here freely in order to spread the gospel, we'll go elsewhere. But also, we have a belief, which comes right from the Bible. It's all laid out for anyone who wants to read it in the book of Revelation, which is a much disregarded book of the Bible, unfortunately, that in the end time, those chosen few will be saved from what otherwise will be worldwide destruction. So we have contemplated over a long period of time and speculated about when that end time will be. We don't know. Where we will be taken to safety, we do not know. We just believe that when that end time comes, we will be saved. And rather than going someplace for James Jones Guyana ending, it will be to be saved while everybody else, unfortunately, will be destroyed.
When the receivership was imposed, you did, because your people sending funds and all were more or less cut off. Did you not then attempt to move your headquarters to Arizona, or was it to another state?
Well, there is a certain misunderstanding about the word headquarters and even about the Worldwide Church of God. The Worldwide Church of God is a spiritual body. It's a spiritual organism, whereas the Worldwide Church of God Incorporated is a California corporation carrying on some of the temporal affairs of the church. That corporation was under attack by the Attorney General. He, unfortunately, had lawyers working for him and his department who didn't realize the difference between attacking a piece of paper and attacking a spiritual body. The spiritual body of Jesus Christ, which, as I said, constitutes membership, simply were waiting for instructions. Where do we send God's money, which, of course, is the 10% tithe? And as soon as a spiritual leader of the church advised them, they sent the money elsewhere. This came as a great surprise to the Attorney General, and of a bigger surprise to the receiver, who suddenly had all of his water cut off. In other words, he no longer had any money.
All right. Now, speaking of that, did this controversy, this notoriety concerning the church, concerning the charges of siphoning off funds, did this interfere with the flow of money to the church? Did those members then hold back? And if so, why?
Temporarily, it hurt us because the receiver, you have to understand, the receiver was an ex-judge. He had never been a receiver before. He had been circulating letters around the city asking for jobs. He had been retired and he needed money, and he was writing to the legal profession asking for a job as a receiver or some other a type of work, arbitrator and the like. He came into this particular position without any experience for it and tried to take over a major worldwide enterprise. The first thing he did was to go to the bank and cut off our credit by stopping the payment of over $1 million worth of checks. And then the very next thing the bank did, of course, was to pay themselves off, and therefore a line of credit of some $4 million was automatically disturbed and has not been, shall we say, replaced since. So temporarily, we had a stoppage of our normal credit lines, and it took us a period of time to raise additional funds from the membership, which, of course, responded to the need. So in the long run, we got those funds back, but we've had to modify our day-to-day operations to do so.
And I find this fascinating. There is an obvious conflict of interest. And there are those in the legal community who cannot understand how Deputy Attorney General Lawrence Tepper could not see the conflict, especially when he was about to appoint this man Chatos as a deputy to the state. The controversy grew stronger when Hilaire Chatos appointed retired Judge Stephen S. Wiseman as the receiver. In return, Wiseman appointed Hilaire Chatos as an assistant to the receiver. And as the action proceeded through the courts, Hilaire Chatos would make the statement that he no longer represented the real jurors, that he in fact represented the people of the state of California. Now, Judge Jerry Pack's decision to put a receivership into the Worldwide Church of God without notice to the attorneys representing the church, I think will be argued and debated within the legal community for many years to come. I see again, and I pointed to it earlier, a very serious conflict of interest here.
There is a very serious conflict of interest, and unfortunately, the investigative reporters as yet have not done the job on that particular point. One reporter, whom I haven't seen in some time, did do a lot of work. He spent 2 or 3 months and was certain that he would be published in a local newspaper. And when that story would break, of course, the lid would come off the entire problem, which you refer to as a conflict of interest. And unfortunately, he was not published. I would like to know, I'd like some other reporter to find out why this man's 90 days worth of intensive effort was never used.
A big question. They have charged that you and Herbert Armstrong and others had siphoned off vast funds of money. When the chips were down, I noticed some fascinating legal payments for legal fees rendered, as much as one attorney receiving $200 an hour in this case. And I wonder if you'd recite for us some of the fees that were paid out of church funds in the course of this legal action.
I lay it all out in today's ad, which appeared in the Los Angeles Times. The ad is entitled, Corruption Did Not End in Government with Watergate. And I point out how the receivers who were complaining about the fact that the church was paying Mr. Armstrong too much money and paying me too much money and spending too much money on the normal operations of the church, these same people would have ripped this church off at the rate of $4.5 to $5 million a year. Their monies, the monies that they took out or wanted to be taken out, amounted to $451,000 for only 6 weeks worth of quote work unquote. And I might say that the receiver spent as much time napping in his office as he did anything else. Now he has to take his naps at home, and he doesn't even have a chance of being paid for it.
Let's get to Garner Ted Armstrong, dynamic, dramatic young individual. His image, of course, was seen on television for many years. What created the falling out between the father and the son? What was at the bottom of all this?
Well, that's a very long story. I cover it in some degree in my new book, which you referred to, Against the Gates of Hell. But essentially, the church had a Ted Armstrong problem for about 10 years. And Mr. Armstrong loved his son, still loves his son. And for a great deal of time, from about 1969 right up until the spring of 1978, he was doing everything within his power to keep the door open for his son. In other words, to find a way for the son to measure up the responsibilities which had been delegated to him. And he finally decided in the spring of 1978, as he admitted publicly before the entirety of the church and in print, that he simply could no longer put the spiritual obligations that he had to the flock, to the brethren, and of course to the church, and being accountable to God. He could not put those considerations ahead of what was his love for his son. And he had to put his son out of the church, and that, of course, is another Absalom story.
Mike Wallace, in his interview with you, Stanley, on Coast to Coast Television on 60 Minutes, indicated that Garner Ted Armstrong was offered a $50,000 a year amount if he keep his mouth shut. That, I think, was the gist of what he was...
Yes.
At least that was the implication.
Yes. And actually, the circumstances are well documented. There's a complete file on the matter. And that file was offered to Wallace, but of course he didn't want to use it. Ted Armstrong wrote his father And after his father put him out, and he said that he didn't want to be a vagabond the rest of his life. He didn't have any money, and he didn't have any home. And he had some good years within the church, and maybe the church should consider the good years with the bad and give him something when they let him out. So the father wrote a letter first, kind of informal letter, stating that if he were to abide by all the covenants that were implied in his ordination, to wit, to hold sacred and sacrosanct, as well as confidential, all of the spiritual inner workings of the church, that he would allow him to have a home to lease from the church for $1 a year, and also would see to it that he would be paid a benefit roughly equal to about one-fourth of what his annual income was. And then Mr. Armstrong asked me to embody that particular letter into a formal contract. So I simply used the same language that he, Ted Armstrong, had used when he was letting out other people from the organization over a period of time. I lifted the language out paragraph by paragraph, thinking that what was good for the gander was good for the goose.
Worldwide Church of God, the object and subject of discussion, and with Mr. Stanley Rader. And we're going to continue and take some of your calls in just a moment. We're talking with Stanley Rader, and now very briefly, let's go to the telephones, and it's your turn to talk back. We're both listening. Yes. Come in, please.
Hello.
Yes.
Mr. Rader?
Yes.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
I am Galen Bader from Alexandria, Virginia. My wife, Mariana, is a member of your church. She and I went through a litigation over the custody of our 7-year-old daughter. And I was awarded permanent custody of the child by virtue of court orders in both Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. But my wife absconded with the child, and they are now in hiding. I haven't seen my daughter for 2 years exactly. Do you think you will be willing to help me locate my daughter?
Well, yes, I would, if you would write to me or write to Mr. Tkach, who is the head of ministerial services for the church. I'm sure that the matter will be taken up, and anything we can do to rectify a wrong will be done.
Thank you very much, sir. Now it's your turn. Come in.
Yes, George. My name is Robert.
Hello, Robert.
And I'm from the San Fernando Valley, and you and I go back to 1938 when a 7-year-old boy used to listen to George Putnam on radio in New York City.
All right. And Stanley's right here.
Yes, I'm going to ask you a rather controversial question.
Yes.
I'd like Mr. Rader to comment on it. I'm of the opinion, George, that churches ought to be treated as other large businesses in this country, and I think from your previous comments on previous shows that I've listened to, you've expressed certain concerns about the way they've been taking over radio stations and so forth. I feel that big business ought to be taxed just the way the churches ought to be taxed just the way every other big business is taxed. Now let me very briefly give you a little background for this question. I was a landlord. I lived in Washington, D.C. for a period of 12 years. I rented apartment buildings at that time. There was another church group, not Mr. Rader's group, but a very vast group within the United States who were also in the business of renting apartments. They rented those buildings. They paid no taxes on them. They avoided all the expenses that I, as a businessman, had to spend in the maintenance of those buildings, and yet they were in direct competition with me.
I don't want to be rude, but to the point. So little time, so many calls.
Okay, I would like Mr. Rader to comment on the question: Should the churches be treated as other big businesses in this country and taxed accordingly?
Well, I would agree very much with you that when a church is in business and is competing with other business people, then they should not have any advantages, and they really do not have any more.
All right, thank you very much. We must move quickly. Yes, your turn.
Come on. I'm June.
Yes, June.
And we saw Stan Rader on the 60 Minute program, and when he got angry at Mike Wallace, he said, "You're on my list," and I'd like to know what kind of a list he has.
He is on my list of irresponsible journalists. Your question is a good one, and there was a very interesting part of the interview with Wallace that unfortunately he chose not to use. One of the most significant statements that he made that was untrue was that I, for example, had not let him be I did not let him interview Mr. Armstrong. The actual facts of the situation were in the full interview, and I told Mr. Wallace that not only did Mr. Armstrong refuse to see him, but Mr. Armstrong advised me not to see Wallace. And so Wallace said, why? And I said, because Mr. Armstrong doesn't have a very high opinion of you. And he said, well, you mean a little bit like Mr. Nixon. I said, worse. He is wiser and has lived longer. And then Wallace wanted to know why I was seeing him. I said, Mr. Armstrong permits us to build character by making mistakes. I've made a mistake.
Thank you. Now your turn. Come in.
Yes, this is another Robert from Anaheim.
Yes, Robert.
Mr. Rader stated that Herbert W. Armstrong was ordained some time back.
Yes.
What church was he ordained in?
The Oregon Conference of the Church of God.
And how much time did he spend in theological seminary?
Well, Mr. Armstrong did not spend time in a seminary.
How much time have you spent in theological seminary?
I have not spent any time in a theological seminary.
How much money do you take out of the Worldwide Church of God each year?
Oh, I would say something like $300,000 a year.
I think you are more of a materialist than you are one who could be called spiritual. I think you're running a religious racket, and I think you're a hypocrite, and I think you're an insult to all the good, fine, decent ministers. You're giving a bad name to good churches.
Sir, are you a minister, may I ask?
I am not a minister. I am the son of a minister, and I'm a descendant of three generations of ministers.
Oh, thank you very much.
I have been brought up.
Yes.
With a strong religious orientation, an honest orientation, where the ministers do not live high on the hog. And I think that's an insult to all decent ministers. I'm sorry.
All right. Thank you. George Putnam here, and I'd rather you wouldn't make personal attacks. We've sat here, and we can take it, but I'd rather you just discuss the issue. Stanley Rader's here, ready to end. It's your turn to talk back.
Hi.
Hi.
First of all, I'd like to emphasize that I happen to come from a very religious family, so is my daughter. But before I criticize or speak about any subject, I listen, and I listen to many. Graham, Shure is one example. Humbert, when I see that family with their big diamond, huge fancy cars, all the property they own, and Scott, that man just about turns me off to be atheist.
All right, please, one question. One question, please.
I thought I would never agree with Murray, you know, the atheist, but I think, as previous caller said, it is about time that we look into the searches who are only after the mighty buck, like this gentleman, Rader says he receives $300,000 a year salary. As a private attorney, would he get it? I think religious should be religious, and they should be taxed and investigated.
All right, you're making a speech, madam, and I ask you to ask a question. I don't believe this. Thank you very much. George Putnam here, have you a question for Stanley Rader? I don't want any lecture, and I don't want any speeches. Quickly.
Hello, this is Carolyn.
Come in.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. This question is in regards to the recent employment contract in which all Worldwide Church of God employees were laid off and were asked to sign an employment contract with Herbert Armstrong.
They were not asked to sign an employment contract with Herbert Armstrong. They were offered employment by Herbert Armstrong.
All right. You, as a legal advisor and an officer of the corporation, are you not aware that you are guilty of violation of the law under Section 206.5 of the California Labor Board states, in brief, that it is a violation of law for any corporation to require an employee to sign a contract that would cancel benefits such as severance or vacation due him on the last day of employment? All your present employees are entitled to full severance and vacation from the Worldwide Church of God and have one full year from April 25 to file their claim.
All right, let's get
a
quick
question.
Response.
What's the question? Am I aware of that law?
That the new contract is illegal because it cancels out...
That's your opinion. Nobody was...
Section 206.5 of the California Labor Code states that.
You were not denied... If you were an employee or anyone you know is an employee, you were not denied any benefits. The notice of termination told you if you have any benefits coming, you are to contact your superior, and before you sign anything, you are to make them aware of it.
Yes, thank you. Now it's your turn. Come
on. I have to be in sympathy with the church. I believe it's far more personal when these people ask about taxes. I believe it's a principle of freedom of common cause. To me, these businesses have more of an actual constitutional freedom now than the churches of God or any church. They have to have probable cause to go into a business. How come that we, the church of any church, have to have anybody just come in and put a receivership over the church of God, no matter which church it is? When a business, they have to come in and prove probable cause. And, sir, isn't there a bill right now going into effect that will help your case, where it would put the attorney back to probable cause according to the Constitution of the United States?
That's a very good statement. And what is happening at the present moment in the state legislature is that Section 9230 of the nonprofit corporation law is probably going to be repealed.
Thank you. Your turn, very quickly.
Yes, my name is Lila. And I was a member of the Worldwide Church of God for 17 years. My husband started tithing when he was 16 years old.
You have 30 seconds.
To the Worldwide Church of God. And I just would like to say this. In listening to Mr. Rader, I've got two or three pages, full pages of notes in rebuttal to what Mr. Rader said about the Worldwide Church of God. And I would just like to ask you, George, if you would give some of the other people a chance who were members of the church for 35.
I would delight in having all of you come here to the studio, and Mr. Rader is equal to the situation. He will come back, I'm sure, and we can have a discussion. My time is up. I'm only allowed an hour and a half.
Right.
And you will understand that I've tried to take as many calls as possible. I didn't want to be rude, but I want to thank Stanley for appearing. Yes, we'll do it again. When do you suggest?
I suggest...
When can you get all that membership here?
Well,
person?
I would just like maybe one or two ministers that have been disfellowshipped under the regime.
What about a few who are in favor? Would you like to balance it and get both sides?
I certainly would.
Thank you.
There's a lot to say on our
right.
side who have given...
Okay. And I want to thank this person for calling. We don't have time to talk with you.
Okay,
thank you.
All
right. Thank you for calling very much. We must run, Stanley. I'm only allowed this time. I want to thank you, and I wanted to try to set the record straight and make this a balanced situation.
I thank you for the opportunity.
And will you autograph this unreleased book, Against the Gates of Hell, by Stanley Rader, published by Everett House? I'd like to have the first copy. Thank you very much. We'll be back tomorrow. You take it easy. I'll see you then. This is KIEV, Radio 87, the station that lets you, the listener, help decide what programs you want to hear. You're the best rating service in the business, and each of our programs appreciate your continued support.